Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. That's right, we're live here this week for the full 2 hours of Main Menu. And this week we have a very special guest joining us. He's been here before on Main Menu, and one of the newest members of the GW Micro staff. But before we get to him, let me warmly welcome my co-host, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl.
Good evening, everyone.
Oh, the technology is at its best.
Yeah, it's working pretty well right now.
Good, that's good, because I had all kinds of interesting fun tonight. But anyway, let's see. Let's give everybody contact information. We'll start by now. The phone lines are currently not open, but they will be. And the number to reach us is at 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, and we'll let you know when that number is open. And Daryl, you want to give us the IM and all that kind of fun stuff?
Yes. If you'd like to, excuse me, if you'd like to chat with us on MSN Windows Live Messenger, you may do so. Simply add mainmenu at acbradio.org. That's mainmenu at acbradio.org to your MSN Windows Live Messenger contact list and chat with us that way. If you'd like to keep track of any notes that are being taken during the show, you can do that on our Twitter page. That's twitter.com/mainmenu, twitter.com/mainmenu. And finally, that information, as well as some other more in-depth information from time to time, will be available on the Main Menu blog, which is at mainmenu.acbradio.org. That's mainmenu.acbradio.org.
That's right. All right, great. And not much in the technology news front this week. We have Replay AV version 8.40, and the main item of interest here in that version is that XM and Sirius customers can now record live streams without having to be limited by the 90-minute limit, which I guess was in force prior to version 8.4, and there were some miscellaneous fixes as well. And you want to talk a little bit about the CD issue with Freedom?
Oh, okay. Yes, for those of us who are SMA holders and received JAWS 9.0, you want to take a look at those CDs. You will have received, many of you have received two CDs. There were some concerns with the installation routine on the first batch, so they sent out a second batch. So you want to install the CD that has replacement on it in Braille and print, I suppose, as well. But anyway, it should say replacement CD. You don't want to install the first one. You can also, of course, download the if you had an SMA left before, you know, when JAWS 9.0 was officially released, you can download the copy over at freedomscientific.com.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, though, that I found out last night was that the build that ships on the replacement CD is a later build. It's 519.
Oh.
It was kind of interesting. Learned that last night, so kind of...
Now, I wonder if that's been updated on the site.
No, I don't think so. That's not what a representative from Freedom said last night.
So. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, so... Well, enough of the Freedom talk. Let's move on to GW Micro and a longtime DJ on the ACB Radio Interactive staff and now a full-time employee of GW Micro, Raul Gallegos, is here to join us. Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing very good, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you,
and you, Daryl, as well, for having me on the show.
Well, great. We're glad to have you back, and... And now we haven't heard you on the interactive side in quite a long time.
You know, I've been planning. I've been really wanting to do a show, at least even if it's for covering some offers. But I just don't have any time, especially in the last 3 months.
I bet.
I have literally put in at least 60 hours a week in trying to get this product out that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, it's been very hectic, and I'm hoping that now that we've officially released, I can maybe take a breather and, you know, relax a little bit and hopefully have some other time to do other projects.
You can break out some of that 80s wacky Christmas music and
oh, that's right.
Play it on Interactive.
Yep.
There you go. Well, today GW Micro announced two exciting products that have come out. And we thought we would talk about both of them tonight. But let's first talk about, because all of these center around the VoiceSense product. And now we've had you on Main Menu before to talk about that product before. But I thought it would be good just to spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes just briefly talking about what is the VoiceSense and why would somebody be interested in that. And then we'll move on to today you announced version 1.1 of the firmware, and I'm sure there's some extremely exciting new stuff in that, and then we'll get into the whole GPS angle of all this. So take it away and tell us about the VoiceSense.
Well, first off, the VoiceSense is currently the smallest PDA note taker for the blind available today. It's roughly 7 inches from left to right, and about 4 inches front to back, and it weighs just a little over half a pound. And so it's very light. It's got a Perkins-style keyboard for the input, and by default it does not get sold with a Braille display. However, there is a Braille display accessory which you can purchase separately, and it simply attaches to it through a USB cable. And basically, the VoiceSense has all types of features that are found in common note takers, such as word processing, database, address book capability, and that kind of thing. But it also has built-in, without having to use external devices or external accessories, it has built-in Wi-Fi and built-in Bluetooth, so that you can, with the Wi-Fi, you can connect to wireless internet, hotspots, you know, places like coffee shops and all that, or your own home network. And with the built-in Bluetooth, you can connect to various things such as Bluetooth keyboards, Bluetooth GPS receivers, which is definitely going to come in handy for our later discussion, and various other Bluetooth devices in general, like phones.
Yeah, I was just going to say my new Bluetooth phone.
So it's got that built in. It comes with 1 gig of flash memory, and when you plug it into your PC basically sees it as a removable drive, and so you know it'll see it as a 1 gig removable drive to allow you to copy files to and from it, etc. And so it's feature packed, and one of the greatest things about it is that you can multitask with it. And it's got power saving mode. Sorry about that. It's got power saving mode, so it'll take care of its own battery. But it's got multitasking capability. So if you have word processor and web browser session open, and you want to copy stuff back and forth, you can do so without having to close one or the other. And while you're doing all that, you can also be listening to music and chatting on MSN Messenger. You can multitask up to 7 different programs all at the same time. So it's very rich and feature packed, and it's all around a very nice unit to use, and not only for tech support, but I also use it personally every day.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really really compact and definitely loaded with lots of features. Now you came out with version 1.1 of the firmware today, and I know that that actually has been available for the public now for quite some time. And would you like to tell us a little bit about what's new in that?
Okay, well, certainly. What we've been doing, since we released the VoiceSense in June, we had sort of 2 different builds of the 1.0 firmware. And there was the June build, and then it was the July 27 build. And then from that point on, we started adding new features that not only enhanced some of the things that were missed in the initial 1.0, but it also fixed several bugs that were reported throughout. And pretty much from September, we've had public beta out to allow the general public to test some of these new features and find different things, and that way we can get them fixed. One of the biggest things that was added, which, well, to me it's a big issue anyway, is that the USB port was greatly enhanced on the VoiceSense so that it will accept a lot more USB devices, such as more USB hard drives. It'll accept USB keyboards. It will accept USB CD-ROM drives. And those new thumb drives that are out, the U3 drives, it'll read those as well with no problems. And you can connect CF card readers or, different multimedia card readers. And if you have a CF card or an SD card already installed onto the side ports, when you plug in the VoiceSense to the PC, not only does it now see the flash disk as a removable drive, but it also sees those other cards that you have installed as additional drives. And so it's basically become more compliant as a USB device with multiple USB capabilities. We also added other features that people were requesting a lot, and to try to keep up with the competition. One of the biggest things in email is we added SSL support, and SSL is basically a secure way of transmitting and receiving email. And for example, if you have a Gmail account, which a lot of people are getting nowadays, they require you to use SSL for the POP access. And so with the version 1.1 now, if you have a Gmail account, you can now use the VoiceSense to get your Gmail.
Well, that's good, because even at universities and things, too, that they're beginning to make sure that you actually are using SSL encryption. They won't even let you connect to their network.
So that was that was one of the email enhancements. We also made enhancements to other various applications, such as the web browser, as different sites or types of sites were reported that weren't working properly or would lock up or anything like that. We were able to find out what kind of HTML or any sort of code that they're using to be better compatible with the VoiceSense. And so things like that were addressed, and we enhanced the MSN Messenger by adding the option to turn on and off various sounds that are associated with it, such as when you send a message or when you receive a message, so you now have control over that. And then some of the problems that were reported that got fixed were, some of them were just kind of silly problems that were just overlooked in the initial release, such as there was one which is kind of a silly thing. If you have your progress messages set to silent, so that there's no beep and no percentage telling you of a file that's being moved, and you moved a file, the VoiceSense would lock up for some reason. And there appeared to be no rhyme or reason for it, because if you turned on the progress, whether it's through the voice prompt or through the beeps, then everything would copy just fine. So, little things like that. And then there was some stuff that we addressed that was a little more major, such as downloading large attachments with the email client. Used to sometimes lock up the email client, and now that works fine. And a good example of downloading a lot of large attachments is people who receive newspapers electronically or whatever now can get them just fine without any problems.
Oh, good.
So those are some of the major things that were enhanced. On our website, we have a list of all the changes between the 1.0 and the 1.1 firmware, which gives a lot of the details of some of the more minor stuff. But they're all certainly there.
Okay, good. Yeah, and let's see. Do you guys have a quick URL to that, or
I sure
just
do.
Go? Okay.
Yep. The URL is www.gwmicro.com/voice_sense. and that's voice underline or underscore S-E-N-S-E.
Cool.
And that will give you detailed specs of the voice sense, and there's a link there that will link you to files for the voice sense, and under that you'll be able to get the 1.0 as well as the 1.1 firmware and read the change log.
Okay, good. Yeah, yeah. Now, for those that don't know, what is the current price of the VoiceSense?
The introductory price of the VoiceSense is $1,895, and as I mentioned, that is an introductory price. At the beginning of January of 2008, that's going to go up to the regular price of $2,395, and so that's currently what it is, and that, like I said, includes the VoiceSense. You also get a carrying case and some, you know, the cables that you need to connect it to a PC or to connect accessories to it.
Okay, good, good. All right, now this brings us to what we had originally talked about, and I actually didn't realize that 1.1 was going to be coming out exactly at the same time. But before we get there, Daryl, did you have any questions come in from IM, or do you have any questions? Daryl?
Not at this time.
Okay. Just checking. That was to talk about the new GPS product, which I think is really exciting, and you have some pretty interesting stories to tell up on the GW Micro blog as well about some of your midnight experiences running around with your voice sense. So let's see. Why don't we just get started with what is this new product, and we'll start there.
Okay. Well, this new product is the official name for it is GW Sense Navigation. And it's kind of a long name, so we've also made an abbreviated name called SenseNav. And basically, it is GPS for the VoiceSense. GPS technology is used, basically, it's global positioning, so that you can find out where you're at in real time. And together with the use of a GPS receiver and maps, you can get detailed information such as the street you're going to, street you're at, searching for addresses. Anything that's plottable, basically, on a map is available to you. And we are able, fortunately, to make this happen through the use of the Sendero SDK. And as many of you may or may not know, Sendero has GPS products available already, and so because of them, we're able to utilize the SDK that they have out to cut down a lot of the development time. And so all we basically had to do is write the user interface for it and, you know, make sure that the information is passed correctly. And so what the program does is it runs from the VoiceSense, and together paired with a GPS Bluetooth receiver that comes with the package, and an 8-gig CF card loaded with maps of either the U.S. or Canada, it will allow a person to get 100% information of their surroundings. And I do say that 100% in relative terms, because people need to be aware of some of the caveats with using GPS technology, which I can get to in just a moment.
Okay.
But certainly it'll give you the information that's there available in the map, and allow you to explore the map virtually from the comfort of your home or hotel or, you know, wherever you might be, or it'll allow you to interact with it live while your GPS receiver is getting actual signals from the satellites. And you mentioned earlier how you hadn't realized that we were going to release both the firmware and the GPS program on the same day.
They probably have to go hand in hand, right?
I'm sorry?
They probably have to go hand in hand, I would think. Maybe you added...
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Part of the reason why we did that is because to successfully run SenseNav, you have to be using the 1.1 version of the VoiceSense firmware. And so if you're a current VoiceSense user and you purchase the GPS program, the navigation program will not function properly unless you have that 1.1 firmware. And so that's why we did it that way.
Okay, yeah, well, that explains it. I kind of figured that, thinking that since they both came out exactly the, you know, pretty close to each other, that one would need the other. Now, if someone doesn't have the 1.1 firmware installed yet, will the product install that automatically for them,
the product will work, but it will not be the actual release, so it'll be like running pre-release software, and so there may be problems, bugs, okay, etc. And so if someone calls for support or whatever, the first thing we will have them do is upgrade to 1.1 to start on a level playing field, if you will.
Okay. And that will come, what, on a card or something that they'll just put in? Or how will they install it?
The way the software works, the actual program itself is already installed in the firmware.
Oh, it is,
but
okay.
It will not run... I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. It's actually already part of the firmware, but it will not run unless you have already purchased the actual authorization for the software.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
when you get your maps on an 8-gig card, it will also have a key file that's only going to work with your particular voice sense, and that will allow the program to work.
Okay. So you'll get some sort of something to download and put onto the voice sense to unlock it.
Correct.
Okay.
It'll unlock the program.
Okay, good.
In addition to being able to download the firmware for the VoiceSense, you can also use the online update feature that the VoiceSense has.
Mm-hmm.
From the main menu, you would simply press the letter U twice, and you'll already have to have an active internet connection, and then it will automatically just download the files that it needs to update and upgrade its firmware that way without you having to download it off of a PC or off of our website.
Oh, good. Okay. All right, you probably can buy this as a bundle too, right? I mean, obviously you could buy it as one specific package, the VoiceSense, with the product already enabled on it, shipped from the
Correct.
Factory.
If you are currently not a VoiceSense user and you're going to purchase it, then yes, you can purchase the VoiceSense together with SenseNav at the same time, and it would already come pre-configured and ready to go.
Okay. And do you know what that bundled price would be?
Not offhand. It was in our release. It's right around $3,400, I think.
$3,400.
I believe the price for SenseNav is $1,595. And so you would take $1,595 plus the $1,895 of the current price. And that
combine
would be
the
price for that.
Okay. And what? Just to be curious, what receiver are you guys providing with it?
We are currently shipping with the Holux M1000.
Okay. I'm not too...
It's a Bluetooth-enabled receiver. It already comes with, the firmware on it. It's already been pre-configured to work optimally with SenseNav without the user having to do anything. You don't need the driver disk that comes with it or anything like that. And
oh, good.
We also provide a custom case for it.
Oh, okay. Nice. All right. Let's see. Okay. So now the 8-gig card, does that fill that card up with the maps on it, or is there any room to spare on that?
There is a little bit of room to spare on it. What we've done is divided the U.S. maps into three different folders. We call them 1 West maps, 2 East maps, and 3 offshore maps. And the West maps, as you can guess, will have the westmost states pretty much all the way through Indiana. And then the 2 East maps will have pretty much states from Indiana all the way east, you know, to New York, Florida, etc. We ended up putting Indiana on both because, well, GW's in Indiana, and, you know, we wanted to make it easier for people that way to have a starting point. The virtual position will always place you at the GW office when you have the Indiana maps loaded. And if you manipulate your own map data, then it'll place you at the center of the capital city of whichever state you have loaded. But to answer your question, all the maps for the U.S. that come with it, and also comes with Guam and Puerto Rico, pretty much take up about 6.9 gigs of that 8-gig card.
Wow, okay.
And then we're also including documentation in the 8 gig card, so you get the manual for the navigation program as well as a hotkey reference.
Okay.
And instructions for the Holix receiver. And then here in the near future, we're also going to be providing MP3 tutorials that will also be able to fit on the card. And that's pretty much going to fill it up.
I would imagine.
Room. Yep, it'll leave you some room to add user POIs, which I can explain later on here on
yep.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can either add your own POIs or you can also add your own sounds to the program by the use of various WAV or MP3 files.
Okay, good. So how big is all of this? In other words, can one... now, obviously, from reading on the blog and people who want to read the Midnight Tale of Raoul can go up to the GW Micro blog and read more about it. A very interesting story. What might one expect in reference to, you know, let's say you were going to go out and you were going to, you know, go for a walk, or you were going to walk and bus to work or something like that. How big is all this stuff? You know, how are you carrying it around?
Gotcha. Okay. Well, as I mentioned before, the VoiceSense is about 7 inches across from left to right, roughly the size of a I don't know, half a foot of a hoagie sandwich. And,
good analogy, by the way. Food's always good.
that's what I had for dinner. Well,
there you
sandwich,
go.
Not the VoiceSense.
Oh, good.
And,
that's good.
So. Basically, what I do is I attach the Holix receiver case to the shoulder strap of the VoiceSense, and I'm currently a cane user, and I say currently because I used to be a dog user, but I'm currently a cane user, and I'm right-handed, and so the VoiceSense, the strap is over my right shoulder, and the VoiceSense is hanging off of my left side, and the GPS receiver attached to the strap, I have it so that it's tight enough that it won't slide all over the place, but it's loose enough that I can adjust it along the strap if I need to. So if the VoiceSense is hanging off on my left side, I typically have the receiver up closer to my shoulder, again on along the shoulder strap of the VoiceSense. And if I need to slide the VoiceSense over more in front of me because I'm going to be typing in a command or trying to listen to something it says, then I'll slide the receiver closer to the VoiceSense so that when I slide the shoulder strap back, then the receiver is still up closer to my shoulder. And so typically I just carry it either on my side or in front of me. And if you are traveling along rainy weather or, you know, any sort of weather that won't be a very positive thing to get in your equipment, you can easily wear the VoiceSense with the shoulder strap inside your jacket, over your body, under your jacket still, and instead of having the receiver over your shoulder, you can put it in a jacket pocket or in your pants pocket, and it will still work. We like to recommend that for optimal signal reception that it be up, you know, facing up close to the shoulder.
Now, Daryl, you have a GPS receiver, don't you?
Yeah, I have the PacMate Street Talk GPS solution.
Right. Now, how does this compare to I don't know how much mobile work you've done with it or not, but how does this compare to, as far as portability? I'm just kind of curious, because I don't have either one of these, obviously.
Well, it's you know, on the portability side, the biggest kind of similar to what Raoul's talking about, you know, your Braille sense, or in this case the PacMate, is going to be the largest component. The GPS receiver is really, it's really tiny. It's almost nothing.
But you're having to wear like a backpack or something.
No, you don't have to use a backpack.
Well, you don't have to, but it'd be kind of I've. The PacMate would be kind of big in front of you, would it not? I mean, I'm just trying to compare it.
It would be, yeah. And it's pretty heavy. PacMate is pretty heavy, so.
But I mean, give people a comparative as to, you know,
right,
what they might be used to. So you could really, in theory, put both of these things in your pocket and run on.
Yes.
It sounds like it, yeah. So the PacMate solution is larger at this time.
Yeah.
In fact, speaking of jackets, I have a jacket with a, you know, typical inside pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to take the VoiceSense out of its case and slide it into the inside pocket and still have a shoulder strap over, but instead of hanging off my side, it was in the pocket. And that way, if you're traveling, if it's raining or snowing or whatever, it won't get wet. And it will work that way. And, you know, thanks to the key lock, then when you're not actually using it, interacting with it by inputting commands, you can safely put it in your pocket without risk of entering in commands that you don't want to by it bumping against you.
Yeah, and plus this way you can walk around and not look so weird with all kinds of gadgets hanging all over you, too.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes people wouldn't even know that you even have a GPS with you.
Yeah. And, you know, and generally that's the idea. I mean, in the sense that, and I don't say this in the sense of it being technology or you people looking at you funny, because a lot of times, let's just be honest, people are going to look at you funny anyway.
Well, that's...
But I'm thinking of more the safety factor. You know, if
sure,
someone
sure.
sees a person walking around with a whole bunch of technology, they're going to think, ooh, dollar signs, mugging.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's, if anything, it's more of a safety factor as well.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of leads me to the next item of safety. I had an incident, which, incidentally, Daryl, I have taken care of it. I remember I got an email from you on that, and it has been taken care of.
I'm glad. Very glad.
Basically, what happened was I was taking an evening stroll, and...
Wait a minute. Hold on, Raul. Let's classify
sure.
evening, because that's very important to to understand. Evening to the normal human being would be about, 7, 8, maybe 9. What was evening to you, sir?
About 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's nighttime.
That's nighttime, yeah. And you didn't get home until when?
About 10:45 or so.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
I kind of call it my evening because that's after the kids have gone to bed and I can have some alone time.
Oh, how I can relate to that.
So there I am taking an evening stroll, and I'm walking with the GPS, and it's obviously dark at night. And I'm wearing a black coat, and I'm wearing black jeans. Not a very smart idea. I'm walking in a neighborhood where there's maybe a set of streetlights about 2 or 3 blocks apart. Now, it's a safe neighborhood, so I knew that part already. That was one of the first things I checked out when I bought the house here. And, you know, so I wasn't worried about that. So there I am walking home. I'm about a block and a half away. And I hear this car that's pulling out of the driveway. And it only took a half second for me to think this, gee, that car sounding awfully, bam, I get hit in the leg. And luckily the car was pulling out at a very slow speed that I wasn't injured beyond a couple of scrapes and bruises. It was going fast enough that the momentum transferred, the energy transferred from the car to my body, pushed me over about 3 feet onto the ground. And so I ended up scraping my knee and my leg, my left leg took the worst of it. Luckily no bruise, or rather I did get bruising, but luckily no fractures and no breaks. And so to cut a long detailed story short, basically, the person did end up paying for it, although she was reluctant to at first.
Yeah.
And since then, I've also gotten a reflector vest.
Oh, good.
So that when I take a quote-unquote evening stroll, I will be more safe.
Yeah, that is a really good idea.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
But so you were using your sense nav though, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was using the sense nav, and you know, like I mentioned, it was hanging off my left side. That's how I typically carry it. The car hit me on the left. And, you know, dummy me, the first thing I'm thinking as I'm laying on the ground is, gee, I hope the voice sense is okay. And then I thought, screw that, I'm hurting. So when I get to work, a couple days later, I tell everybody at work, I said, guess what, we can't release GPS because it didn't tell me about the oncoming traffic.
Yes, that's all you need now is the GW guide. And that would be the
that's right. There we go.
The technology replacement of the cane and the guide dog. Yeah.
Never happened.
So you work on that.
Exactly.
Tell Doug to get on. You'll whip it right out.
Exactly. So the thing to keep in mind when using these devices is it's very important, and I not only say this from experience, but just say this just because people have said I have very good orientation and mobility. It's not a replacement, to put it that way. It's not a replacement for orientation and mobility. You can think of it as more of an assistant, but not a 100% reliable assistant. And I say this about any GPS device, whether it's an automobile, a traffic guide GPS device for sighted people, or, you know, any sort of adaptive equipment for blind people. And that's because the GPS technology in general is not going to be 100% accurate due to a number of factors. Number one being map data. Usually by the time you get map data, it's almost a year outdated. And even though it might have a cool side street that's relatively new, it's not going to have the brand new street that got built 2 months ago. And so you have to keep that in mind. And then the other thing is there's little things like GPS drift. You know, the Earth is constantly moving, satellites are constantly moving, so there's going to be all types of factors that the GPS receiver has to take into account. And so there are some times that you might be facing a certain direction and you stand still, and all of a sudden the program may think you're facing somewhere else or might think that you moved.
Also, for military reasons, aren't they somewhat inaccurate as well?
That's been largely opened up, though.
Yeah, it used to be that way, but it's not as big of an issue anymore.
Oh, it's not. That's very interesting.
No, that's been the case since the late 90s, and honestly, I was quite shocked. I was expecting that after 9/11 it would have been closed up again, but no.
Wow, because I've even heard, you mean definitely within, you know, the 2000s here, I've heard that from other people that it was still, you know.
Sometime in 2000 it was resolved. It was the accuracy is pretty much full. You get the same advocacy. I think the difference is the military has additional satellites and additional systems, right? So, but all uses of the actual GPS are the same because they use it for search and rescue and other things, which used to also be restricted.
Very interesting.
Well, you know, to confess, I'm not very highly technical on the total workings of GPS, but what I do know is that there are enhancements that you can use with GPS, like the WAAS, which is the Wide Area Acquisition. And then there's also such a thing as an LAAS, which is supposed to be more of a local area, and that's a lot more precise. And we don't have that available to us. We have the WAAS available, but not the L.
Okay.
And basically when a receiver gets that WAAS connection, or we just call it WAAS, it tends to be a little more accurate because it's getting signals from local stations, which aren't necessarily satellites, but they may be more like base stations around, and it helps get your signal a little bit better and more accurate. So usually you can get accuracy of around 10 feet.
So have you found
when finding a place is pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
It's really interesting because I know with my PacMate GPS solution, I've stood in front of my house, or I've stood somewhere, and it'll actually, the address will change, and the direction that will change, and it will say something other than zero for the miles per hour that I'm traveling. It's kind of neat.
Right.
I mean,
and that's part of the GPS drift.
Yeah.
And you know, various other factors.
So you're going to see that regardless of the GPS.
You know, keeping.
You're going to see that regardless of whatever product you're using. I mean, that's just
exactly.
Marketing.
And that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, is when creating routes, you have to remember that the GPS is not a human, breathing, living thing. And so it doesn't know the city. It looks at the city the same way it would look at any other city. It's just basically data. And so when it creates a route, it's going to try to create the route in the shortest distance available, which may not necessarily be the fastest or the most efficient way to get from point A to point B. And this is, again, true for any sort of GPS system. So the three things that I see are people saying, oh, this is a good route, let's follow it, and that's usually when they don't know the city very well. Or they'll say, well, this route is shorter, but it's going to take me longer because of traffic. And then you have the people who just outright ignore it because they know the city so well, they're going to know all the little shortcuts.
Okay. Have you found, Raul, that the accuracy has been such that it has gotten buildings wrong? I mean, I guess it's possible depending on how close they are together, right? But have you found that to be
as much of an issue? How close they are together, or also how accurate the particular map and the geocoding is for that particular building.
Okay.
And I've done comparison between different maps as well as different systems, and typically stuff like that comes down to how accurate are your maps. A lot of times my wife and I will drive somewhere, and we have a Garmin Street Pilot 550. We'll put an address in, and the Navtech maps are used with Garmin. We'll put an address into the system, and the SenseNav uses the CalAtlas maps. And at least here in Indiana, the address is usually about 300 feet more accurate with the CalAtlas maps than it is with the Navtech.
Oh, interesting.
And so it really comes down to map data. But I've seen it work the other way around in different cities, where sometimes the one from the Garmin is going to be slightly more accurate than the one that we use with SenseNav.
How often do those maps get updated? I mean, obviously cities add streets all the time as they get new subdivisions in and you know, that type of thing. Are these updated like quarterly or anything? Do you know?
Well, typically it ends up being about once a year.
Oh, boy,
and that
okay.
has to do a lot with when CalAtlas is able to send them on to, for example, Sendero, and then Sendero has to convert them to the proper format, and then they'll be able to distribute them out.
Okay.
When they can, then we can. And so we're probably looking at approximately about a year before maps are updated. And a lot of times this is even the case with commercial GPS products. It just, you know, that's usually how it goes.
Sure. Now, when it's time to update the maps, will that be, can people just go up to the website, or will you offer to send them a new card, or how will that work?
Part of the way the package works is they're going to get the one card with the current maps on it, but the user will also be able to have a download user account on mysendero.com, and with that they'll be able to download their maps. And so if they're entitled to map upgrades or any new map source or whatever, they'll be able to get them from there.
Oh, I bet you that would be rather large to download, huh?
Yes. To kind of give you an idea, the California maps compressed are about 250 megs.
Woo! Okay. Yeah.
California and Texas are two of the larger maps that are in the U.S.
So if you're a dial-up user, you better find a good friend.
That's right. I'm sure that when the situation arises, if we do have users that are dial-up users or whatever, we'll be able to probably work something out where, you know, maybe they can buy another card or send us their card, and you know, be able to do something. More than likely, that's going to be handled on a case by case basis.
Dial down.
That's
right.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, let's see. Do we want to talk now about creating some routes?
Okay. I'd like to do that.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is turn on the VoiceSense and load the navigation program and demonstrate how to search for addresses how to search for a destination either by an address or by a POI, and then I'll demonstrate how to create a route to it. So first I'm going to power on the VoiceSense.
Power on. File manager left parenthesis, F right parenthesis.
Okay, so now I'm going to press down arrow twice, and that's going to put me at the option for the navigation program.
Word cross, GW sense navigation left parenthesis, Z right parenthesis.
And I'm going to press enter.
Loaded maps, comma, please wait, period. Six maps loaded, period. Live navigation. GPS receiver set to replay mode, period. Receiver connected. Street: Willard Drive. Static box. Look around intersection, look around foy: Rawl Castle, 69 feet southwest. Pause GPS replay.
Okay, so we heard a bit of information here. First, it loaded the maps, and it only loaded six maps. I've got Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and both Ohio and Indiana take, or and Illinois take up two maps each, and then I think I have Colorado in there. So it's just a custom set of maps that I loaded for this demonstration. And then it said that the GPS is currently set to replay mode, and what I did is I recorded a GPS session from another day. And so right now, even though it's in live GPS navigation, it's basically in that replay mode, so it's a simulated live mode, which will serve for our purposes. And then it read me the nearest POI, which is called Rawl's Castle, and then I paused it. I paused the replay recording with backspace Q, and so that way it's like if I was literally freezing time. So, to kind of explain a little bit, a replay file is good for demonstrations like what I'm doing now, or it's good for troubleshooting. Let's say you are in a particular area and the GPS program isn't behaving right, or it's reporting inaccurate information, and you're not sure if it's your maps or you know, some other various factor. If you can record a log file, basically, of where you're at, it'll record the date and time and your GPS accuracy and where you moved and all that, and then you could use that to send to us, and we could replay it and be able to literally track your movements at the specified date and time that you did it. You can also share your replay file with other users of, for example, like the Sendero GPS will also work. And so what I've done is I created a replay file on a drive that we did from my house to GW Micro, but it's paused right now, so it'll allow us to basically be frozen in time while we make a search and create routes and all that.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And just as a side note, too, route files can also be shared between VoiceSense users that use the SenseNav, and they can also be shared with, like, the Sendero BrailleNote or Sendero voice note users.
Are these text files, or what are they exactly? Are they
They are a form of a text file. I opened up a trace file once, and it basically looks like a log file. There's a whole bunch of numbers and coordinates and
okay,
like timestamps and that kind of thing.
Okay, so it's not like driving like directions or something. It's
no.
It's correlating to the maps.
Exactly.
Okay.
So right now I'm literally, as far as the GPS is concerned, I'm at my home. If I press the letter A, that will tell me the nearest address.
4627 Willard Drive.
Which is 4627 Willard Drive, and that's actually not my address. But again, because of the geocoding, it may be off a few houses or a few buildings or whatever. And that's, again, something to be expected. So the first thing I'm going to demonstrate is how to search for an address and then create a route to that address. So let's say that I want to search for GW Micro by typing in their address. So I'm going to press space S, as in Sierra.
Search for address dialog box. Search map question, edit box.
And it's asking me for a map to search, and I'm placed inside an edit box. So since I don't have the entire U.S., I can't type anything like CA for California or anything like that. So I'll have to type in, you know, something that I do have installed. And since I definitely have Indiana installed, I'll type IN.
IN.
And press Enter.
Max colon, Indiana 1/1, list item.
So it said Indiana 1/1, and that's basically saying, hey, I found Indiana, or based on you typing IN, this is what I found. If I had just typed an I, it may have shown me Illinois and Indiana, allowing me to choose which one I want. So since I do want Indiana, I'm going to press Enter.
Search city question, edit box.
And now it's asking me for a city. And again, this is the same type of search string. I can type in whatever, and it will search it as a string. So I'm going to type in the word Wayne.
W-A-Y-N-E.
And I'm going to press Enter.
Find city. City colon, Fort Wayne 1/3. List item.
Okay, so there's three cities in Indiana that have the word Wayne in them, Fort Wayne being the first one, and that's the one I want, so I will press Enter.
Search address question, 0, edit box.
Now here it's asking me for the address number, if I erase the number and just type in a street name in the next field, it will search for intersections along that street name. But since I do know the address, I will go ahead and type in 725.
7-1.
Oops.
1-2-5.
Okay.
725.
Yep, 725. Now I'm pressing enter, and it will take me to the street.
Search street question, edit box.
And GW Micro is located at 725 Airport North Office Park. So I'm, that's kind of long to type, so I'm just going to type airport.
A-I-R-P-O-R-P.
And press enter.
Find address. Street colon, airport drive 1/3. List item.
Now, if airport was the only street that had the name airport without finding other matches based on that substring, it would have just actually performed the search and told me the distance of where it is based on where I am.
Could you just press enter on the edit box and have it bring up a list of streets that met that address number?
Yep, I just pressed enter.
Okay. I mean, well, you typed in airport, but what I'm asking is, if you didn't type airport and you went over to the street field and you weren't sure what streets were actually on that address number.
Ah, it would show me all the streets in the city, and it would take a while to pull them all up.
Okay, so it doesn't narrow it down by street number.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, it does not.
Okay. Well, that would be cool. That's cool for 2.0. Huh?
Yep. Part of that is because a street address, because of the north, south, east, and west of a city, could pretty much be on virtually any street. A good example where it wouldn't be is my street here, Willard, which is basically only one block long. There is only one Willard in the entire Fort Wayne, and so that 725 wouldn't match up there. When you search for the street based on that address, it probably wouldn't come up. But to be honest, I haven't tested that.
Okay.
So in this case, it brought up Airport Drive as my first choice, and that's not the one I want, so I'm going to press down arrow.
Airport XP 2/3.
And it said Airport XP, which basically means express. And I'm going to press down arrow because that's not the one I want either.
Airport North Office Park 3/3. List item.
And there it is, Airport North Office Park. So once I press enter, it's going to perform the search, and it's going to tell me how many miles it is away from me.
Distance colon, 5.11 miles. Static box.
So it tells me that it's 5.11 miles. Now, what's important to know about distances and setting a destination is that distance is the direct line of sight distance. So if I was to literally draw a line from my house to GW Micro, it would be exactly 5.11 miles. But you're not actually going to walk or drive in a straight line.
Sure.
So the route, when you do a distance check on the route itself, it may be more than that. In most cases, it will be, unless you're actually traveling in a straight line from point A to point B.
Pretty rare.
While I'm here on the static box that gives me the distance, I can press down arrow and get more information about the results.
Zip code colon, 46,825. Static box.
So there's my zip code, 46825. And by the way, one of the new features we added with the 1.1 firmware is the ability to turn numbers off so that if you just want to hear digits, that's an option that you have. So if I press down arrow again.
Address colon, 725. Static box.
It reads me the address. And then pressing down arrow two more times will give me the latitude and longitude coordinates of the address that it found. Once I check the information and make sure that's okay, if I want to set that as my destination, I can press Enter D, or I can simply just tab to the Set Destination button. So in this case, I'm just going to go ahead and press Enter D.
Successfully set destination. Street colon, Willard Drive, static box.
So it told me that it successfully set the destination and it closed the search box. And now if I press D by itself here from the main display area, it will tell me the destination information.
5.11 miles northwest, Airport North Office Park.
So it tells me that it's 5.11 miles northwest of my position. Now, because I actually haven't moved yet, it doesn't really know if it's in front of me, behind me, to my left, or my right, or et cetera. But if I've actually been moving, let's say I was moving west, it might say 5.11 miles slightly to the right, or slight right, and then it'll say northwest. And that's because if I'm already moving west, since it's northwest of me, then that would be slightly to the right. And so a lot of the information that it'll give you is based on whether you've moved or not. And if it doesn't give you certain information, that's because you either haven't moved or it doesn't quite have a heading on you yet.
Okay.
So that's one way to set a destination. Now, if I want to create a route there, I open the route menu by pressing R, and then I create a vehicle route by pressing V. So I'm going to press R, then V.
Route announcement, left parenthesis, right parenthesis, pull down.
There was R, and now V.
Created vehicle route.
Are there different types of routes besides a vehicle?
There are three types of routes total. There are vehicle, pedestrian, and manual.
Okay. Destination set to waypoint 55, comma, airport north office park, comma, next, comma, waypoint 2, comma, Willard, comma, and Evan 469 feet west.
Okay.
Poland, Willard Drive.
So it gave us quite a bit of information here. And I'll get to the different route types in just a moment. The thing that defines a route is a series of what are called waypoints. And without getting into the highly technical details of what a waypoint is, let me use an analogy, and I'm going back to food again here. Think of a waypoint as a breadcrumb. So to create a route from point A to point B, a series of breadcrumbs will be dropped from your starting point, and they'll be laid out across where you're supposed to go, whether driving or walking. And certain types of these waypoints or breadcrumbs are called turning waypoints, which are the significant ones. Those are the actual ones that are going to give you the instructions to say, you know, in such and such miles, turn right or turn left or whatever the case is. So if you have a stretch of road that you're not going to be turning on, that's maybe, let's say, 3 miles, that stretch alone might have about 10 different waypoints. But the waypoints there are just simply just regular road markers in the sense that you pass them, it makes sure that you're still on the route, and that's it. You don't get any instructions on it because you're not really supposed to do anything until you get to the turning waypoint.
Okay.
So it told me that it set 55 waypoints, and the next waypoint is waypoint 2. Your waypoint 1 is always where you're at, the beginning breadcrumb, if you will. And it basically says to go 400 and some odd feet to the west to get started. Now, let's say that I want to get a list to sort of get an idea of what instructions this route is going to give me. You know how if you pull up a route with MapQuest or some other place, it'll give you step one, do this, step two, do that. You can do that with this by pressing backspace I. And backspace I is called the turn list dialog.
Turn list dialog box. 469 feet, comma, waypoint 2, comma, Willard, comma, and Devon, comma. Proceed ahead on Devon Drive heading northwest 1/5. List item.
So there's 5 items here, and the first one says waypoint 2, Willard and Devon. Tells me how many feet and into which direction it is, and it tells me to proceed ahead, and then I'm going to be heading northwest. So now if I hit down arrow, it's going to tell me the next turning waypoint, which is going to be a left turn. So I'll go ahead and press down arrow so you can hear that.
0.21 mile, comma, waypoint 4, comma, 7, comma, and Vance period. Turn left on Vance Avenue heading west 2/5.
So the first thing it told you is 0.21 miles. That basically means that as soon as you get to the first waypoint turn information that it gave you, you're going to now travel 0.21 miles until you have to make a left turn. And you make a left turn at Devon and Vance heading west. And as you noticed, it said waypoint 4. So basically, waypoint 3 is a waypoint that isn't significant enough in the route. You don't have to turn. And the reason for that is as you go north on Devon Drive, you're going to come up to a street called Woodstock. And that's a four-way stop, and you just keep going north, and then the next street after that is Vance Avenue. And that's the actual one you turn, so that's the one that got listed here. And if you have any questions on this, feel free to stop me, and I'll...
No, that's fine. You're doing great. What I will do, Raul, is let's go ahead... Whoops, whoa. that's what happens when I turn too quickly here and bump into things. Let's go ahead and... open up the phone lines here, and we'll do that right now. And then while you're describing, if we'll get callers, I'll let you know. And and we'll also remind people of how they can get a hold of us besides mail. But let's open up the phone lines first. Well, that's assuming that the technology will work. Oh, what a night. Anyway, let's see here.
Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
All right, we got the lines open. And, Daryl, you want to remind us of the MSN and email addresses?
Absolutely. You can send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. Or you can add mainmenu@acbradio.org to your MSN Windows Live Messenger contact list and chat with us through that means as well.
All right, good. Okay, good. Go ahead and continue there, Raul, and we'll monitor things on the site.
So what I'm going to do now is close this dialogue and go back to my regular display.
Street Poland, Willard Drive, static box.
And what I'm going to do is unpause the replay file, so it'll actually play this. Now, since I know that this replay file is from my house to work, it will actually follow this route that I created. And what'll happen is, as you approach each turn, you're going to get two sounds. You're going to get the approaching turn, which is typically before you get to it. In other words, it's just a warning, hey, there's a turn coming up. And then you're going to get a sound and directions when it tells you that the turn is actually there to turn whenever you can. And then it will give you instructions on what to do after. So I'm going to resume the replay file with backspace Q.
Resume GPS replay.
Now, since I'm in actual, as far as the voice sense is concerned in the program, I'm in live navigation, so this is as if we were all there and moving. So if I press G to get my GPS accuracy, it will tell me the number of satellites that it was tracking at that moment.
GPS accuracy, colon. In replay mode, comma, 25 feet, period, 8 satellites, period.
So it's telling me that it's got about 25 feet accuracy and it's tracking 8 satellites. And it did give me a message there about how it's in replay mode. Now, if I press .5, that's the shortcut key for your heading.
Heading, colon, unknown.
Because I haven't moved, it doesn't know what the heading is yet.
Arrive near virtual position.
48 feet, flight right to virtual position.
And my virtual position...
Approaching the head turn, comma, at waypoint 2, comma, Willard, comma, and Devon at 383 feet. Proceed ahead on Devon Drive heading northwest.
Okay, so there it played the approaching turn and then the actual turn sound.
Straight. 0.21 miles to waypoint 4, comma, Devon, comma, and Mance, period. Turn left on Mance Avenue heading west.
Okay, now I'm going to pause it here real quick.
Pause GPS replay.
So what it did is it played the information because we started moving, and I'll confirm that in just a moment here with you. We started moving, and we moved west, and so it played that turning ahead sound, and then we turned onto Devon, and so it gave us the next set of instructions to proceed for 0.20 miles and then turn left. Now I have it paused here. I'm going to press the letter H.
Headed colon, north left parenthesis. 354 right parenthesis.
So now it actually has a heading on me, and we're traveling north, and the degrees on the compass is 354. Perfect north would be 0 degrees, or 360. In this case, it would say 0. So 354 means that it's, for the most part, north with a very slight angle to the left, to the west. And so most people wouldn't even notice a difference between 6 degrees. If I press .2 or the letter S like Sierra,
speed colon. 20.
It will give me the speed in miles per hour because I'm using the Imperial system, which is the system that we use here in the U.S. If I switch this to metric, it will give me the speed in kilometers per hour. And when it checks the GPS accuracy, it will tell me the accuracy within meters. And so those differences are taken into account. So now I'm going to resume the file.
Resume GPS replay.
So now we're
time
is unfrozen.
Devon Drive, comma, 56 feet ahead to Woodstock Drive, period.
And it told me about an intersection that we were at. It's that intersection which is waypoint 3.
Approaching left turn, comma, at waypoint 4, comma, 7, comma, and Manson 670 feet.
It's now it's telling me that we have a turn coming up.
On Mass Avenue heading west.
And there's my turn. So as soon as we're able to turn, we will go ahead and do so.
Speed, 18, look around intersection, on Devon Drive, 103 feet ahead to Vance Avenue,
So we're still approaching Vance. We're still going north. And Vance and Devon has a stoplight because there's a school there. And the POI information may give us the school information. So one thing, as you're driving or walking, if you have the look around set, option set to on, it's going to tell you intersections that you come across when you're stopped, and it will also tell you different commercial POIs that it finds. And a POI is a point of interest. Points of interest could be anything, really. It doesn't have to be a business. It could be your home.
Look around intersection, on Vance Avenue, 342 feet slight left of Glencairn Drive,
Continue straight.
0.29 miles to waypoint 7, Vance, and then Coliseum, and E Coliseum, Turn slight right on the dash 930, East Coliseum Boulevard heading northwest. Pause GPS replay.
Okay, so I went ahead and paused
Vance Avenue.
What we did is we made a left turn on Vance, and now it tells us that our next set of instructions is to turn right on Coliseum. So what I was saying is when you have the look around, it will tell you about commercial POIs that it may find. It will tell you about intersections, and it will tell you about your own custom POIs that you may have added. A custom POI could be something like your home, or it could be maybe there's a particular sidewalk that always has low-hanging branches. You could mark that as a POI so that when you're traveling along the sidewalk, you'll remember by the voice sense reminding you, rather, that low-hanging branches are coming up. So, you know, to get your shears out if you're that type of person to carry such things with you.
Like if you're Larry from Blind Cool Tech.
Exactly. And so anything, complex intersections, the front door of a business is another good way to set a POI because, as we discussed before, due to the way geocoding works and GPS accuracy, what if you want to get to a store that's in a shopping center? Well, the shopping center is probably going to have one or two addresses, and each individual store may not have its own address. And so what you would want to do is walk to the front door of that store and set a user POI so that you can create a route to it instead of the shopping center in the future.
Nice. Now, can these POIs be shared? In other words, are you guys going to create a repository where consumers can submit this type of information?
There is a repository of sorts already through mysendero.com. Every month there is, at least every month or so, sometimes a little bit longer, but typically every month, there's a new compiled list of user POIs that people have submitted to Sendero, and then they get compiled and people can download those. And you can also download various other POIs. For example, the state of Oregon's transportation system has submitted POIs for the bus stops. And so when you approach a bus stop,
nice.
The POI description gives you what bus number stopped there.
I wish everybody would do that.
Boy, that would be huge.
That would be great.
Yes, it would. I can just imagine myself going back to Denver and telling RTD, can you give me a free pass for 5 months because I'm going to go ride every bus and stop at every bus stop.
Well, you know.
I mean, they have to have that information already in coordinates somewhere.
Somewhere, sure.
Electronically. And if every bus system around the country would jump on that, I think that would be great. That would definitely help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so to answer your question, yes, the user POIs are shareable. If I have a user POI file here, I can certainly share it with another user. The user would have to rename it to something else without changing the extension. Otherwise, it would overwrite their own user POIs, but they'd be able to use it. A lot of times, because of sharing user POIs and then combining them with commercially available POIs that may be already included in the maps, sometimes you'll get double or triple entries. But that's okay, actually, because the more entries you get, the more accurate information overall you have. My daughter's school is maybe two blocks away, and there's three different POIs for it. And the location of each one is maybe about 200 or 300 feet off from each other, so I usually just pick the center one if I want to go. And that's, you know, that kind of gives me a pretty good idea. Well, I used to anyway. I don't now because I know how to get there perfectly.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it definitely helped when we began. So as you're moving along here, what I'd like to show you is the alphabet of commands. The letter A is for address.
4233 Vance Avenue.
So it gives me the closest address. The letter B is the pedometer on how far I've moved.
Pedometer colon 0.42 miles.
So we've traveled about 0.42 miles, and you can reset that to zero by pressing Enter B. And the reason B was used for that is because the letter P is already taken up with POI. If I press C, it will tell me the city, state, and zip code of where I currently am.
City colon, Fort Wayne comma, state slash province colon, Indiana comma, zip code colon, 46,815.
Okay, so I'm in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46815. If I press D, it will tell me the destination.
4.81 miles slight right comma, airport north office park comma, northwest.
And now it tells me that it's slightly to my right because it has a heading on me. It knows in what heading I'm moving. If for whatever reason I was moving east, it would say behind me, slight left or something. So that's D. The letter E does not do anything. The letter F, as in Frank, searches for nearby POIs. And these are POIs that are a quarter mile around you. So it searches for a quarter mile radius of anything. And so I'm going to press that, and that will open up a dialog box.
Near place dialog box. Oilers colon, Creative Communicators Incorporated, comma, 587 feet, comma, flight right 1/7, list item.
So it found 7 registered POIs, and it tells me the name of the POI as well as how far it is from me and whether it's to my left or my right or behind me. And I can use my up and down arrows to hear the other ones.
Rita ampersand Derp Mutter Insurance, comma, 819 feet, comma, right 2/7.
So we're probably passing right there by that insurance company since it says it's to the right. You know, if we're traveling west, then it'd be north of us right there to the right, so we're probably passing right in front of it.
Glenwood Park Elementary SCH, comma, 679 feet, comma, behind 3/7. List item.
So there's the school I was talking to you about, and if I continue there, it'll give you more entries on that. Now, once you find a POI, let's say you're looking for a particular one, I can press tab, and it will give me information about that. In the description field, it will usually have the address and phone number of that POI.
Boy description colon, Ramp Avenue, comma, RMF, static box.
So it said for the description, all it had on this particular entry was just that it's on Vance Avenue and it's an RMF entry. An RMF entry, I forget what the RMF stands for, but it's a collection of different POIs that you can download that have been that are in the Sendero format from the RMF repository, I guess, if you will. And it's got a lot of POIs, extra restaurants, extra businesses and schools and so on. This is the description here where you can put in, if you're creating your own user POI, you can put in the address, phone number, you can put in the bus numbers like we mentioned before with bus stops. When you search for POIs, the search string will search in both the POI name and the POI description. And so let's say something is on Main Street. If you type in the word Main for the search POI, then it would search for any POI with the word Main in its name or on Main Street or, you know, the word Main in the description field. If I press tab from here, it will take me to the different buttons such as the set destination, set virtual, or set waypoint. Similar to when I search for GW Micro by searching for the address, I can make this particular POI the destination. If I do that, then it will cancel the route that I'm currently on to get to work. And then it would tell me that I need to turn around and go behind me and to get to this new one, assuming I create a route for it. Now, as far as the different kinds of routes, and I know I'm jumping around here, but I want to try to cover the more important key points. There are 3 kinds, vehicle, pedestrian, and manual. And for the most part, the difference between a vehicle and a pedestrian is how it calculates where you're going to go. For example, a pedestrian route might have you go walking north on a south one-way street, whereas a vehicle route wouldn't do that because you couldn't drive there. And then also the way times are calculated based on how fast you're moving. If you're sitting idle, like at a red light, the accuracy, or rather the percentage of your route is calculated at 25 miles an hour, whereas a pedestrian route is calculated at 2 miles an hour to kind of give you an idea of how much longer you have. If you are moving, though, it calculates it based on how fast you're moving. And so it tends to give you a pretty good accurate estimation. So if you're riding along with someone on the highway and you're going to be approaching some address and it tells you about 10 minutes or whatever, then it's basing it off of the 60 or 70 miles per hour that you might be driving at that moment. So this dialogue, again, that we were in was the F by itself to search for nearby POIs. I'm going to close it by pressing F4.
Street colon, Mass Avenue static box.
So it takes me back to the main display area. If I press space F, it will open the set position as POI. I sort of call it the advanced find command, because this is where you can search for POIs.
Set position as POI dialog box. Category question, all 1/44. List item.
There's 44 categories to choose from, and the reason you would want to pick a category is, let's say that you want to search for the word apple, but you only want it to come up in restaurants, like you're searching for Applebee's or, I don't know, an Apple store or something like that, then you wouldn't want a computer store to be found, or you wouldn't want, you know, somebody's last name of Apple to be found, you know, if it's some sort of a law firm or something, I don't know. So you can choose the categories here. It's got a primary category list and a subcategory list. The subcategory list changes dynamically depending on what you pick for your primary category. So, for example, if I press R to go to restaurant,
recreational camp 31/44, restaurant 32/44, list item.
I'll press tab once.
Sub-category question, all 1/233, list item.
And there's 233 subcategories under restaurant, and those are typically different, larger chain names. So, for example, let's try typing the letter P.
PF Chang China Bistro 130/233.
And let's hit down arrow to find another more common one.
Panda Express 131/233. List item.
Do you guys have Panda Express in Arizona?
I believe so.
I think so, yeah.
Kind of a cheap Chinese food restaurant. So let's say I want
to... Yeah, we
actually
have one
Express.
We have one in our student union, I know that.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
So I'm going to press tab again.
Starting distance question, 0 miles.
Now, the default starting and ending distance is 0 and 0.25 miles, so it's sort of the same as the nearby POIs. But let's say that I want to search for Panda Express anywhere between 0 and 10 miles from me. So I'll leave the starting position at 0.
Ending distance question, 0.25 miles.
And I'll type a 10 right here.
1, 0.
And then I press tab.
Search string question, edit box.
Now, since I'm already searching for Panda Express, it's going to search for that listing. I wouldn't need to type anything here unless I know that it's on a particular street, and then I could type that in there. But I'm just going to leave that blank. One difference to know about the dialog box here when compared to the search address box is that in the search address box, you can press Enter to move from field to field, or you can press Tab to move from field to field. However, here in the POI search, you can only press Tab to move from field to field, because as soon as you press Enter, it will activate the search button. So I'm going to press Enter now.
No search point. Search string question, edit box.
And I couldn't find Panda Express within 10 miles of my current location, which is actually fine with me. So let's find something else, like
and
a pizza place.
Question, starting distance question, sub-category question.
Tons of pizza places, I bet.
Rather than arrowing down to a pizza, actually, I'm going to tab back to that
search
box,
edit box
and just type pizza. What did you say, Jeff?
I said there's probably tons of pizza places around you.
Yes.
I love those pizza places.
So what I'm going to do, instead of doing a 10-mile search, I'm going to do a 3-mile search.
10-distance question, 10 miles, edit 3.
The way I'm moving back and forth between these edit boxes is with Tab and Shift Tab. Tab is done with F3 on the voice sense, or space F3 for Shift Tab. Another way you can do a Tab and Shift Tab is by pressing space 4-5 for Tab and space 1-2 for Shift Tab.
Search string question, pizza, edit
box. All right, so I'm going to press Enter.
Toilet colon, Little Caesar pizza, 0.56 mile, Select left 1/17. List item.
17 pizza items found within 3 miles.
Wow.
And keep in mind, some of these may be duplicate entries. So it lists them according to nearest to furthest. So I'm going to press space 456, which is my end command, and that's going to take me to the end of the list and the furthest pizza place.
Only pizza north, 2.78 miles, slight right 17/17.
Okay, so that's Olay's Pizza. It's called Olay's Pizza North. If I hit tab from here, it'll give me the information of that particular place.
Point description, 4706 Coldwater Road, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46825, 260-482-9691. Static box.
Now, one of the most common questions I get is, that's a lot of information. What if you want to only review the address or the phone number? Because it's a static box, you can't use your left and right arrow to review that. And if you don't have an attached braille display, then you have to basically listen to the information again. Well, the VoiceSense has a virtual cursor. And the virtual cursor is controlled with holding down the F2 or the F3 key, and then your cursor movement commands, such as .5 for next word and .6 for next character. So I'm going to press F3, and then while I'm holding that down, I'm going to press .5 till I get to the phone number.
Description, 4706, Coldwater, Road, Fort, Wayne, N, 46825, 260-482-9691.
Now I'm already on the number 2, so all I have to do is press .6, and again, while still holding F3 down, and it will read me the number character by character.
260-482-9691.
Okay, so I know their phone number is 260-482-9691. And so that's a way that you can review information with the VoiceSense, and actually using the virtual cursor commands is something that works anywhere in the VoiceSense, not just specifically in the GPS program.
Oh, good.
If I hit tab from here, it will give me my buttons on what I want to do with this particular entry, either set a destination or place my virtual position there.
Set destination left parenthesis, enter -D right parenthesis, button.
Okay, so there's the button for destination, that's enter D.
Set waypoint left parenthesis, enter -W right parenthesis. Button.
Waypoint, enter W.
Set virtual position left parenthesis, backspace -V right parenthesis. Button.
Virtual position backspace V.
Cancel. Button.
And the cancel button, which will close my dialog.
Street colon. Mass Avenue static box.
So that's pretty much what F does. Right now, as far as the VoiceSense is concerned, we are in live navigation because it's pretending to be in live. However, there is a navigation called virtual. And virtual navigation allows you to explore without having a GPS receiver active, so it wouldn't give you speed information, it wouldn't give you GPS accuracy or anything like that. And it's a good way to be able to check out streets, see where they go, see where they turn. You can create routes to use later on in live navigation. Let's say you're going to make a trip to a new city, you can kind of scope it, if you will,
sure,
to find out what the city's like get information about it without actually being there.
Yeah, for example, if you went to, you were going to a specific hotel, you might be able to, virtually walk 8 blocks in a square around and find out, points of interest and that type of a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I took a business trip to Columbus, Ohio last week.
Oh, okay.
On Wednesday and Thursday. And I was able to map out the areas where we were going to ahead of time and create my routes, and I was also able to find a restaurant and, find different areas and say, hey, there's a Borders book there, real close or whatever.
Yeah.
And, so it gave me all that information.
Well, good. Yeah. Yeah.
So continuing as far as the alphabet goes, G, as I've demonstrated already, is the GPS accuracy. H is for heading when you're moving. I will tell you the distance between your virtual position and your live position. So, for example, my virtual position is at my house right now, and as far as the VoiceSense is concerned, my live position is about a mile away. And so if I press I, it will tell me the distance between those two positions. And that could be good to sort of, if you put your virtual position as a sort of starting point or a reference point or whatever, you can kind of figure out how far you've moved.
Distance between GPS and virtual colon, 0.29 miles.
Okay, so it was less than what I was actually thinking. I was thinking about a mile. So that's what I does. Also, a lot of these commands have either a combination of backspace with the letter, space with the letter, or enter with the letter. And they're all accessible by, you know, simply pressing in the letter with the combination key. And if you're not sure what one command does, you can always press space H, which is context-sensitive help, and that will give you a list of all the commands and what they do so that you can sort of, you know, start to memorize them or build your own reference. Also included in the manual, in section 15 of the manual, is the entire hotkey list, which is also the same as the hotkey reference guide, which is included in a separate file, so that if you have an embosser or if you want to read it on a Braille display or listen to it while you're not using the program, you can kind of start to get a feel for what the keys do. So that's I. J doesn't do anything.
Hold on one second, Raul.
J is used to hear the...
Raul, hold on. Daryl, he's fading away. Daryl?
Oh, that's weird. Everything is everything's sounding fine here.
Okay, yeah, I'm hearing it sort of faded away. Do we want to... Okay, if it gets really bad, I'll let you know. We may have to call you right back, Raul. But keep going.
Okay, sure.
Just love this technology.
It is wonderful. If you're on a route such as I am right now, K will tell you the next waypoint, and it's basically going to give you the information for the next turning waypoint. That's not the same as the next turn information, which is the letter T. K will just basically just give you the waypoint. L is repeat the last message. Repeating the last message is good in case, let's say, that you are traveling at a certain speed or something, and you didn't hear it, so you would press L and it would repeat the message. Now, it does not repeat the command. So if you're traveling at 60 miles an hour in a taxi or something, and the taxi slows down and is going at 30 all of a sudden, and you press L, it's still going to say 60, because all it's doing is just repeating that message regardless of what the new status is. The repeat command is done by the space bar. So if you, let's say you typed in a hotkey command and you don't want to stop to type it in again because you might be moving or, you know, whatever the case is, then you can press the space bar and that will basically simulate that same command again, and the information that it gives you will actually be updated. So if you were traveling at 60 miles an hour and you press space and you're traveling slower, it will give you the slower speed. And speaking of typing in commands, again, that kind of leads into the multiple commands option, which is M. Let's say that you are walking down a sidewalk and you want to know what your current heading and speed is, but you don't want to stop walking every few seconds just to find out. Maybe you don't want to press space or you don't want to press dot two. You just want to hear it. You know, for any number of reasons. Maybe it's cold. You don't want to take your hands out. I don't know. You can use the multiple repeat command, and it's got a number of options that you can choose, and it will automatically type in those commands for you at specified intervals. The default is 25 seconds, and for example, I'm going to press turn on the speed and the heading multiple repeat command. So first I type M.
Turn off all multiple repeat commands, left parenthesis, M right parenthesis.
So the first option it gives me is to turn off all multiple repeat commands, and that's in case they're on. I can quickly just type MM, and that will deactivate them. I'm going to press H.
Heading command on. Three colon.
So it tells me heading command is on, and then it closes the menu. Now I'm going to press MS.
Turn off all multiple repeat commands, left parenthesis, M right parenthesis, speed command on. Free colon, map avenue static box.
Okay, and I'm going to resume the replay file.
Resume GPS replay.
So now, there's my
approaching
turn.
At waypoint 7, map, and then Coliseum, and E Coliseum at 930 feet.
And then it's going to give me my my turn when I actually get there.
Left parenthesis, 266 right parenthesis, period, speed colon, 2.
So there's my heading and speed. That was done from the multiple repeat command. And as I get closer here, it's going to tell me that I need to turn.
Turn slide right on the dash 930, comma, East Coliseum Boulevard, heading northwest.
Okay, so now as soon as I turn, it's going to tell me to continue straight, and it will give me the next set of instructions, which is about 3 miles or so.
Continue straight. 3.19 miles to waypoint 32, comma, W Coliseum, comma, and Lima, period. Turn slide right on the dash 1, comma, Lima Road, heading northwest.
So I'm supposed to travel for about 3.2 miles.
Coliseum Boulevard, dash 930, U.S. 30, Highway 930, State Road 930, period.
And I'm traveling
left parenthesis, 318
right northwest,
period. Speed colon, 39.
At 39 miles an hour. And so there is an idea of what happens when you have the multiple repeat commands. It gets in...
heading colon, left parenthesis, 292 right parenthesis, period. Speed colon, 45.
It gets mixed in along with the other messages that you're going to hear, such as what street you're on and any other information that might speak automatically. As you notice, commercial POIs are not being spoken. I do have that option off, or else this would be...
Heading colon, northwest left parenthesis, 294 right parenthesis, period. Look around intersection colon.
They'd be talking constantly.
Well, we had an email question come in. Period. And
turn that off here.
Turn off all multiple repeat commands.
Okay. Raul, what was that?
Yeah, we have a we have two questions that came in from email.
930, comma, US 30, Bibby's, comma, Highway 930, comma, State Road 930, Status Box.
Pause GPS replay. Okay, okay. I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Okay, we had a couple of questions. He said it would be a little distracting to continue to hear the punctuation. Can that be? Can you set the level of punctuation that's read?
Oh yes. As a matter of fact, right now I'm using it in the default factory settings.
Uh huh.
I agree. It is completely distracting. Actually, I normally turn it off. But I wanted to turn it on to kind of give people an idea of
sure.
how the information is separated out.
No problem. Okay. And then how fast can the speech go?
The speech has a, it goes from rate 1 through rate 12. Currently it's at rate 6, I believe. Typically I hear it at rate 9 or 10, depending on how loud the environment is.
Mm.
And I'd be happy to demonstrate that here for a little bit to kind of give you an idea.
Yeah, that would be great. And then he has one more question. That has to do with if he were to be taking this on a long trip, like maybe he's on a Greyhound bus or something like that, and once in a while, you know, for the most part, he wants to be able to read a book on the bus, but he'd like to be able to switch out of GPS mode and you know, read the book, and then maybe every half an hour go and say, okay, where am I? Is that possible?
Yes.
Okay, good. So
and
it continuously runs.
Keep in mind that whether you're
then.
Actively using the GPS program or not, if it's got an active connection to the GPS receiver, it's still going to be using up the GPS receiver's battery, and you know, so it's going to be an active connection, even though it may be passive for a while, in the sense of not being focused.
Sure, of course, but you're not going to be hearing the stuff if you move focus away from it.
Correct, you will not. What you will hear, however, and this is, I think, a real neat feature. If you have a route open, and let's say you're focused on another program, we often do this a lot when we're driving somewhere and we're listening to music. I bring music along inside an SD card and plug it into our stereo system in the vehicle. So what we'll do is we'll be listening to music, and the sounds of the approaching turn will play, even though you may not be focused on the GPS program.
Oh, really? But that's only if you have a route open, though.
That's only if you have a route open. That's correct.
Okay.
Jeremy wanted to clarify I guess there's some questions as to whom can purchase and use SenseNav as far as location. Do they have to be located in the U.S. and Canada? I guess that depends on where the map data.
Well, yes, and that's a good thing that was brought up. We can currently only sell the VoiceSense and the GPS program to residents of the U.S. and Canada. And so, yes, you do have to be in one of those countries to be able to purchase this.
Is that just because that's the map data that's available?
Not necessarily. that's some of the reason, but a lot of it has to do mainly with licensing and the particular agreements that we have with the developer.
Oh.
Are there other maps available? Say you were going to travel to England.
There are other maps available that will be made available for purchase. They're not available right now as of this time, in the sense of they're not available through us for the SenseNav. For example, if you're a Sendero customer, there are maps that you can purchase from them, but for maps to purchase to use with the SenseNav, you'll have to go through GW Micro, and that's currently not available, although that will be.
Okay, so you cannot go to Sendero and buy additional maps and have them work?
Not to work with SenseNav, no.
Why is that, if I might ask?
It has to do mainly with the agreements that we have.
Okay. So you do some sort of an encryption key or something that ties it to your product.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. No, that's good. That's
so fine. I couldn't use commercial map data either then.
That's correct. You could not. And then not only that, but typically map data, even if it wasn't encrypted in the sense of, like between one particular type of GPS system to another, a lot of times it's also, beyond their, or it'd be a violation of their particular map rights to use it with other software.
Is there a way to set a timer and have it automatically read you specific points or specific locations? Let's say you are reading a book or something, but you don't necessarily have a route open. Is that possible?
No, it isn't. The only sort of timer there would be like the multiple repeat commands, but for those commands to actually be heard or displayed on the Burl display, you'd have to be focused in the program.
Sure. But if let's say you're traveling to North Carolina, you would just set up a route there then, I guess, and just leave it open? Is that what you would do?
You could do that, and the only problem with that is if you have to travel for, 300 or 400 miles without moving off of that particular highway, then you're really not going to hear anything anyway.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's only going to tell you the turns.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Daryl.
So another question is, how would you, on a feature basis, how would SenseNav compare with, say, the Maestro/Trekker solution? Have you used that, Raul?
I haven't. I was able to actually look at it last week, very briefly, for about 10 minutes. But to actually use it and be able to make a fair comparison, I really wouldn't feel qualified to do that. I can compare it a little more to the Braille Note, but not.
Okay,
not
so how would it compare to the Braille Note?
Well, with the Braille Note, it's actually going to be very similar in the sense of because of the fact that it's both based off the Sendero programming. A lot of the commands are the same. There are a few differences in the way certain commands work. To kind of give you an example, .2 tells you your current speed with our product, and I believe .2 tells you your current waypoint with the Sendero. So there are a few keyboard differences. As far as like the speed though, and the types of maps that it uses, or rather not speed, but the information that you get, and the types of maps it uses, it's virtually the same. So it really comes down to, as far as making comparisons, is how does the voice sense in general compare to like the Braille Note or the PK or the Voice Note, or the various other products that use the Sendero.
Now, do you guys offer any hardware maintenance agreements or even software maintenance agreements for the products?
Currently, there is no software maintenance agreement. The firmware updates have been free up to this point.
Okay.
And if that changes, there may be an option to get some sort of a software maintenance on it, so that future upgrades may be considered in that sense.
Okay.
But so far, they have been free of charge. And as far as the hardware, I would honestly have to check. That's something that mainly our orders department handles. But I do know that we have a hardware agreement, maintenance agreement for the Braille Sense, and I can't remember offhand if we also have one for the Voice Sense.
Does this solution work on the Braille Sense as well, or just the Voice Sense at this time?
At this time, only the Voice Sense, but the Braille Sense capabilities is coming very soon with that. We're going to be testing that to be able to make sure that it gets ported correctly, and that will require a firmware upgrade to the Braille Sense, which is going to include the various features that the Voice Sense has.
Of course, that will increase the size just a little.
Yes.
Obviously.
It'll increase the size, so there's going to be that to consider, but you'll also have a built-in Braille display for quiet navigation as well, so you don't have to rely on the speech.
Then you can yell at the cab driver if he's taking you in the wrong direction.
That's right.
Yeah.
who's
driving in this car anyway?
Well, a lot of times I know my wife, because we'll be driving, you know, or rather she'll be driving down the highway. I'm like, hey, are you supposed to be going at 76 miles an hour on a 70 mile, you know? She's like, I hate that
nice
thing.
Stop. Yeah. That's pretty bad. Is that pretty accurate? Do you find that to be pretty the speed
yes. It's pretty accurate. Sometimes I notice that there might be maybe a 1 or 2 second delay, and that just has to do with how fast that information is received and then calculated. I'm sure there's a number of factors that it has to go through. So if you're going constantly at 60 miles an hour and then you slow down,
sure,
or whatever,
of course,
like you're approaching an off-ramp or something, and you go at 40 for a while and you press S right at the point you're slowing down, it may not pick that up right away until about a second.
No, yeah, interesting. Oh, well, that's, I bet you she loves that, huh?
Yeah, she's threatened to roll down the window and, you know.
Throw the Voice Sense.
So.
Yes. Hold on to it tight, man.
Yeah, exactly. So what I can go ahead and do here is turn off the punctuation and increase the rate a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that.
New grade left parenthesis, G right parenthesis, colon, grade 2.
Okay, so what I did is I pressed space O, which is the global options. Now I'm going to press P till it says punctuation.
Punctuation level left parenthesis, P right parenthesis, colon, all, list item.
And I'm going to press space to turn it off.
Off, list item.
And I'm going to press enter.
Saved option. Street, East Coliseum Boulevard, the 930, US 35B, Highway 930, State Road 930, static box.
Okay, now I'm going to increase the speed. And I do that with backspace F4.
Voice volume 10.
Oops, that's the volume. Hang on a sec here. You'd think I'd know this product.
Voice volume 10. Resumed. Voice rate 8. Voice rate 9.
So there's voice rate 9, and I resumed the GPS replay. So now I'm going to press G for accuracy.
GPS accuracy. In replay mode. Log. 13 feet. 9 satellites.
So it said GPS in replay mode, WAAS, 13 feet, 9 satellites.
Ah, that's pretty good.
And now if I press S,
Speed 39.
And as you notice, the colon is gone, and that has to do with the punctuation being turned off.
Okay.
So
good.
I'm going to press the letter T for my next turn information, and it will tell me you know, how far to go, and then I'm going to turn right.
So I'm
184 feet in front of Trier Road. Now I'm pressing T here.
Next turn, 2.42 miles ahead, waypoint 32, W Coliseum, and Lima. Turn flight right on in 1, Lima Road heading northwest 5 minutes.
Okay, so there it gave me the information, and that I'll get there in approximately 5 minutes. And that is rate 9 right there. That's typically the rate that I listen to it at.
Yeah.
Sometimes rate 10. But again, that just depends on the situation.
And what you're doing, yeah.
Then if I want to be nice and let my wife participate, then I'll bump it down to like rate 8 or something. She can actually understand.
Oh, she's
it
pretty
rate
good
eight,
there.
Very good.
Wow. Yeah. That's good. So now,
wait, rate 8.
When you're walking around, are you using headphones normally then?
Wait, rate 7.
I've done two things. One is to use a, one of those, little tiny earbuds.
Okay,
I don't really like to have anything covering my ears when I'm traveling.
Right.
So
do you get some like Sony earbuds?
The earbud,
or something?
I have it. I only use one for starters. But when I do use it, I make sure that I definitely do not use it while I'm crossing any streets. And if I'm going to keep the earbud in while I'm actually walking, that's usually done only in an area that I've been to, so that I already have an idea of what the terrain itself is like, and you know, usually it's an area that doesn't have that much traffic. Typically, though, when I don't use the earbuds, I will turn the volume up to about maybe 8 or 9, and I carry it in front of me, and if I need to hear something or if I need to ask it some information, I simply stop and put it closer to my ear.
Okay, yeah.
One of the features that we're going to be introducing in the future is Bluetooth speaker or Bluetooth headphone capability. That's currently not available.
Okay.
And so that once it is, you can get, like
a headset,
a Nokia speaker or a Bluetooth headphone headset or whatever, and that way you have a wireless method of listening to it.
Oh, then the only thing you'll need is voice recognition, and you could talk to it.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, well, that would be rather intriguing. That brings up a good question. What other areas, I know you probably can't talk too much about future, but listeners would kill us if we didn't ask. what areas are you guys looking at enhancing the product that you can talk publicly about, or is that sort of...
One of the things that we get highly asked for is printing support for the VoiceSense and enhancements to the word processor.
Mm.
So what we like to do as a company in general is we like to think of ourselves as being a pretty open-minded company and trying to listen, or rather we do listen to all the suggestions that people make, but we also try to be open in the sense that if it's something that is going to be feasible in the long run and something that's going to be doable for what we feel are going to be the majority of the users, then it's probably something we'll add. So, unfortunately, really, I can't say right now that some of the specifics, but I can tell you that one of the things we're going to be looking at into seriously is, maybe some enhancements to the word processor and also possibly adding printing support to the VoiceSense. The problem with printing support is because the VoiceSense is written in Windows or the Windows CE platform, natively it's not designed for printing because it's more of a portable solution.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so that's going
to
be tough.
There has to be some workarounds made for that.
Yeah, interesting. You can't load your printer driver onto it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a standard that some HP model printers do support. I forget the what that's called. It's like PCL3 or HCL3. I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with it. Yeah.
Typically, only the HP printers make those, and so, for example, on the BrailleSense, if you go to the tested hardware page, you'll see that most of the printers that the BrailleSense will work with are HP printers.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why, and because of the fact that printing was added for the BrailleSense, then it only makes sense to be able to add printing for the VoiceSense as well.
Sure. Mm-hmm. How close is the firmware between them? Do they share a lot of similar? I mean, should it be, you think, pretty easy to port across, or is the hardware?
Yeah, currently the firmware as it stands, 1.1 on the VoiceSense versus the 4.0 on the BrailleSense, are pretty far apart in that there was a lot of changes made between the 1.0 version of the VoiceSense. So what we're looking to do on the BrailleSense is be able to make it have the same features as the VoiceSense. And so that way the firmwares will pretty much match each other.
Okay, good.
We also had a request for a WindowEyes update. Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What's up with WindowEyes?
Got any news there?
As far as new releases?
goodies like that. As I said on GW Info, I don't know who all reads GW Info, but it will be out when it's out and not a day later.
Well, good.
but seriously, we start development of the next WindowEyes version a day after the actual release, sometimes even that same day.
Sure, yep.
So I can assure everybody that we released, for example, everyone knows we released WindowEyes 6.1, the actual 6.1, in April this year. Since then, and partially even before then, we were already working on features and enhancements for the next version. And until we feel that it's at a point where it's going to be stable enough and solid enough, we won't really be able to give out any release dates because we don't know them yet. And we don't want to make a guess and say, oh, yeah, sure, it'll be available in X number of months, and then something comes up or some regression happens, and then we don't meet that deadline. Then how do we look?
Well, there's a really interesting blog post, and we should probably give out the URL for that on the GW Micro blog from Doug. I think it was from Doug. You can correct me if I'm wrong there.
No, I already pointed to the blog, yeah.
Okay, good. There's a really interesting post up there about version numbers. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Where he talks about, you know, version numbers really don't mean anything to us. You know, if you were to ask him, you know, what was in 5.1 2 years ago, he'd shake his head and go, "Well, I don't know."
Yep.
and he makes a reference to a version number for the next version, and then says, "And if you want to know what's up, I gotta go. Sorry." And that's how he ends the blog post. It's kind of cute,
right?
So you can.
You know, the thing is it seems to me like the consumers, the users, are the ones to put more weight on a version number.
Yeah.
And we all do it to a point. I mean, if I see a program, I'm using version 1.0 of a program, and then all of a sudden I see an entry that says version 2.0, I'm thinking, hey, that is cool. But if I see 1.01, I'm like, oh, yeah, minor bug fixes. And we all tend to do that.
Yeah, but I've seen version, you know, going from 1.0 to 1.1, for example, where it should have been 3.0.
Right.
You know, companies do it both ways. So,
yes.
You know, I would not get too excited, folks, with you know, looking at a version number and go, wow, that must mean there are, you know, substantial improvements. Now, you know, generally they are if you go from, say, you know, a 2.0 to a 4.0 or something like that. Generally they are, but that's not always the case. I've seen software where just incremental version numbers have added quite a bit of functionality. I can
right.
think in...
Well, we saw that. We saw that type of thinking when we went from 6.0 to 6.1.
Exactly,
you know,
with Vista.
They were thinking the only thing we added was Vista, and that really was not true.
Oh, no, there were tons of things.
Hey, if you look at the release notes and all the features that were added and enhanced or fixed between 6.0 and 6.1, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But yet, people think, oh, it was just Vista or whatever, or it must not have been that important because it was a free upgrade.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And so, but you're right. I mean, you can't really judge on version numbers. And I've joked around with Doug. I said, you know, everyone's already calling it 7.0 or whatever. I said, you know, just to be ornery, we just thought it'd call it 6.8 or 7.01 or something.
Call it 12.0.
Yeah, and just throw people off. Yes, 12.0.
Yeah, or 12.2, you know, twice as good as 6.1. You know, that kind of, you'd be kind of silly.
Yeah, there we go. So, yeah, I wish I could tell you, but I honestly don't know either, so I really...
Well, you really do, can. You do, but you'd have to kill us.
Yep, that's true.
That's right. Okay, so that's really the story. He does really know, but we would all have to be eliminated, assimilated by the Borg or something.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well,
speaking of the Borg, if I can take a minute here to
sure.
Those sounds that you were hearing for the turn ahead, you know, you got the beedle-ling, you know, for the approaching turn, and the bonk bonk for turn now. And the continue straight sound. All those,
don't tell me.
All those sounds can be changed.
Oh, good.
In the card, in other words, the CF card, or wherever you have the GPS software loaded, relative to where the maps are, there will also be a sounds directory. And if you drop in a WAV file with the appropriate name, it will use that WAV file.
Oh, great.
And that way you can customize. So one of the things that I'm looking at expanding in the future is perhaps adding sound packs that people can download.
Star Trek.
And it'll be a zip file that already has the
folder
file
structure.
Names in there, you know, the appropriate ones.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it'll have a description as to what it is, and then that way people can use them if they want.
Good.
And I've already, I don't have it here with me on this particular load, but I've already made my VoiceSense route features be Star Trek sounds.
Of course you have.
So when you're off the route, you know, instead of saying, you know, off route or whatever, it's the computer voice saying warning. You know, so it's
oh, that's funny.
You know, it makes it very, very fun to use.
Cool stuff. Well, okay, so let's let you give us some contact information, and because we're just about out of time.
Well, okay, my name is Raul, R-A-U-L Gallegos, G-A-L-L-E-G-O-S, and the company is GW Micro. You can write to me if you have questions about this presentation or about the GPS program, if you like, and that's R-A-U-L at gwmicro.com. Our main website is www.gwmicro.com.
Mm-hmm.
And from there you can go to the VoiceSense section and get information about the VoiceSense or download the firmware or download the changelog of the changes.
Yeah, there's probably there's probably even more listed there than mentioned here. So,
yes.
Yeah, good. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us tonight, and we're glad you're okay from your little jaunt throughout the night there.
And not even a limp.
Not even a limp. That's good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's great.
At least a week later, not even a limp.
Yeah. Okay, well, next week on Main Menu, we're going to be bringing back our Mac specialists, and we're going to be talking all things Mac. Darcy and Holly will be joining us, and I believe we're even going to be having a special guest joining us from Podcast Land. And I'll leave it to you to figure out who that might be. But she's definitely an interesting guest and has a very interesting personality. And Daryl knows who this person is, don't you, Daryl?
I think I do.
Yeah, yeah. You do. You do. Yes. You partied with her. So you do know who she is.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh, cool.
That's right. We'll talk more about that. But I think she's going to be joining us. And so we're going to do all things Mac, and I think our PC panel is going to be back in the second hour. So that's what's coming up next week, guys. And
that's exciting.
Yeah. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you next week.
If you would like to contact the
Good night,
Main
everybody.
Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed...